Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of many such lodges situated around the world, and frankly, if you pick up a golden periodical from the near the usher's table in the foyer, you will find a very brief declaration, which I will paraphrase for good or ill this morning. But the declaration itself is worth deep study and contemplation. And it has within it concepts about why free thinkers would hold a particular building to be so sacred and so important for a particular cause. From 1909 until now, the ULT, United Lodge of Theosophists, has run in a variety of locations based solely on an experiment in human nature that by association, you could pull together a group of seekers of truth, of volunteers, and on the basis of their common goals and purpose, similarities of aim, you could maintain an entire study center and an effort to keep the philosophy of theosophy before the public eye. The declaration would then go on to alert you to the fact that the loyalty here among those who are associated with the cause, who volunteer, is a loyalty to the founders of the UL, of the TM, the Theosophical Movement, especially in the modern era, Blavatsky and Judge, that the aim is to study fundamental principles and then to work in concert and alone to exemplify those principles in practice. So the unity, the magnet, the glue that attracts and holds volunteers from all over the place is a study of the true nature of self and universal brotherhood. Anyone who's associated with the cause is alerted in the declaration that all those anywhere around the globe, across time, who were engaged or are engaged in the true service of humanity are actually theosophists. And welcome to this ULT and those around the world to the effort for the Theosophical Movement is anyone who desires to fit themselves by study and effort at character development to join the cause, to support the cause. This similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching is a birthright that should be freely shared among all humans. And so the building here in Philadelphia is held uniquely dedicated, devoted, if you would have it, to only the declared purposes. It is sustained by voluntary contributions of time, of service, of study, of cash, and all the activities here, from the nature of the literature at the book table to talks and study classes, everything focuses on the philosophy. This coming Wednesday night is October 24th. The building will open at 5:15, and for 2 hours, there'll be a reference library open, there'll be a book table open, so that you could come in and study straight-line theosophical publications. You could purchase some for home use if you'd like, or you can just use the reference library as you need or desire to. This coming Wednesday night, the study class in the Ocean of Theosophy will begin at 7:30, will last until 8:30, and the focus that evening will be the first portion of Chapter 2 of The Ocean. Next Sunday, the building will open at 10:30 with a meeting that starts at 11 and runs until 12. And that Sunday, October 28th, the title for the Sunday will be Timeless Message of Theosophy. So again, a much better rendition of the declaration and announcements can be found in that little periodical. Feel free to pick one up if you will. This morning, The panelists seated before you are going to be talking about the objects of the Theosophical movement. The entire month is dedicated to an overview of Theosophy and the Theosophical movement. Very frequently, newcomers and dedicated students alike can feel overwhelmed by the study and otherwise aspects of the Declaration. And frequently in this room, you may hear a question from an inquirer, where to begin this study of self and this body of information? How do I begin to exemplify in practice what we're talking about here? What should be my actions? What should be my goals? Across time in the Western world, Aristotelian thought would lead us to search by looking at particulars and then reframing what we've discovered to come up with some general statement or a principle. But Platonic thought from Plato would lead us to search by looking at principles and then applying them to the kaleidoscope of life's experiences and observations. And that's where we'd like to begin this month of October. Let us first consider words, because words and ideas hold great power. An object that we're going to talk about today is anything tangible or visible. And the caveat in the dictionary that we frequently forget is that which is intended to be affected by feeling an end, a purpose, or an aim. It is said in the philosophy that the Theosophical movement dates from the earliest recesses of time, prehistoric in every sense of the word. The objects, that's tangible, visible, and intended to be affected by feeling and aim, purpose, and those objects of the movement remain tried and true across time and all places. Blavatsky herself wrote a phrase laying down certain lines of thought, and in 1890 wrote that motives, objects, or beliefs concerning the idea of brotherhood needs to be based on practical instead of theoretical lines. The development of the modern Theosophical movement is only one pearl on a string of such efforts across time and place. The masters assisted in setting up the cause eons ago by preserving truth. Human companions assist the cause by rediscovering truth and then endeavoring to make it a living power in their lives through teaching it, embodying it as best they can. Prior to the modern times and what was founded as the Theosophical Society in the 19th century of our era, there was the Alexandrian Neoplatonic schools of thought in North Africa, in Egypt, around 200 of the Common Era. On the shores of the Nile River was one of the grandest crossroads of civilization that the West has ever produced. There, the earlier work of Plato was aligned with that of the Far East, the Fertile Crescent, and the Sub-Saharan. The word Theosophia was first used. Unity, study, and work were used to seek the truth behind philosophy, religion, and science. Math and the arts were employed to comprehend the true nature of the human kingdom within and throughout great nature. Ethics, practical ethics, were explored from various vantage points. And a library housing the precious efforts of human minds from around the world and across the centuries was maintained. The essence and cream of the world's ethics, gathered from the teachings of all the world's great reformers, were studied, read, and pondered. These are represented by Confucius and Zoroaster, Lao Tzu and the Bhagavad Gita, the precepts of Gautama Buddha, and Jesus of Nazareth, of Hillel and his school, and of Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato, and their schools. The founders of the modern theosophical movement, H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, were most dedicated to reviving these earlier efforts. They could build upon efforts made throughout the 19th century and the 18th century as well. The European Age of Enlightenment, Ralph Waldo Emerson and the Transcendentalists, Darwinism, Spencerism, the work of Jacob Burma and Saint Martin, as well as materialistic changes in the American melting pot and the evolution of civil rights, all of this interacted in seeking minds, free thinkers, who were working with and reacting to and embodying perhaps long-established cycles, heavenly and karmic, aligned to attract minds from all continents. Certain American values of individual rights and responsibilities offered the freedom to publish, to meet, to discuss openly. And as long as the two founders remained on the scene, the lines laid down were readily discernible. But as in most reform movements in history, once the founders were off the scene, a kaleidoscope effect of thought and interpretation ensued, much like the ripples that go out when you throw a pebble into a pond. What was it that would allow for courageous inquirers to continue the pursuit of truth even until 2018? What tools had Blavatsky revitalized from that Alexandrian period and before that would assist in establishing purity of principles with which to study and work, to live? Three objects.
So now we're going to go through the three objects. And to understand them, this whole idea of thought. So we will briefly mention them now. The three objects of the theosophical movement is to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, color, or creed. Two, to promote the study of world religions, philosophies, and sciences, both ancient and modern. And lastly, to investigate the hidden mysteries of nature, especially the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man. So when we think about these three objects, the whole purpose for them, we look at the idea, it's a safeguard. Yes, it's a declaration, but it's also a protection, a defense, technically a safe guide. For many groups and many different companies and organizations have sat down and made what they might call, in today's world, the mission of why we're here. Ours are these three objects are here as our safeguard, as we said. And the idea, it's a protection and a safeguard that we can always fall back on. There's no adjustments to it. These are the objects. These are the reason that you might find here in this lodge, anywhere in the United States that has lodges, and all over the world. So this idea of a nucleus, what exactly is a nucleus? Well, we can look at it as the center part. It's a core. And what does that nucleus always bring us to? That same aim, purpose, and teachings. If we stick to those, then we know we're sticking to the full volume of it. And this idea to put into practice the theory that by mutual help and generous tolerance of each other's preconceptions, because most of us have preconceptions, not necessarily our own, those which either we've read or we've heard someone speak on or someone told us, but the idea is that we might benefit and benefit it largely, and the chance for discovery of hidden truths and greatly improved if we but put that out. They're studying of the philosophy. We can see the reasonable, that they're reasonable when you start studying them. And more often, they're plausible. It can be done. It's been done in the past. It's being done now, and it will be done in the far future. And that idea to practice universal brotherhood, which is the universal duty of all humankind. It is a duty, and that too holds something. The idea that it's something that each one has to decide for themselves. How can I express my duty to these fundamentals, to my fellow man? How can I, as an individual, spread myself in that condition? So, in that part, we can see it all around the world. And now, of course, we're seeing it so much more due to weather conditions, due to war conditions, due to politics. We see that humanity. There are people that are pulling together at the same time. There's a lot of division. So that's a combination of war. We have to, as individuals, decide where are we going to be, on the positive or the negative end of it. So the idea for anyone new to this, and after looking at these objects, what do you become a student for? Well, somewhere before we ever entered these rooms, there have been people and peoples all over the world that have been, quote, sowing the seeds, leaving them to germinate within time. So there, it takes a bit of work on an individual to think about these ideas and see where I, myself, can fit in to this overall picture. And these questions come to us. And of course, we have to remember there is the pivotal doctrine of the esoteric philosophy, which admits no special privileges or special gifts for humankind save by their own ego, through personal effort and merit, throughout a long series of reincarnations. So then we come back to that same question again. Could this be reasonable? Is it possible? There is a brotherhood of humanity that has existed far back into time. It's a natural instinct within every one of us to be able to understand that. But we have to understand that before this whole idea of Christianity and the outside God and all these institutions that we had to go through and steps to go through to become purified, we look at the idea of between that, and we look at the idea of, which was very popular many years ago, and in some extent today, that of going to seances, having counseling, having individuals today that will go to to talk to people and pick people out and have channeling done. There's all these different things out there. We have to be selective. As HPB had said, what we have to do is to obtain knowledge of all the laws of nature. What does that mean, all the laws of nature? All the universal laws that exist and have existed and will continue to exist. This idea of investigation versus experimentation. This is a good point of these various laws and powers. So we're asked to investigate. We don't have to experiment into some of these because it's not necessary. Of the most important, it's an investigation of these various laws and powers. And as was mentioned before, those were Mr. Judge's constant reminder. It's unity, it's study, and it's work. And we can get that feeling as we begin to read. Anyone who's picked up The Ocean of Theosophy, the first chapter, before we even get into any detail, is letting us know where this whole ideas have come from. We call them the masters of wisdom, great sages who many lifetimes worked on understanding the true laws and the universal laws of nature. And so that they became in time knowledgeable of things. They did the investigation and probably did experimentation on their level, because now they have all that knowledge and they have expressed it and kept it alive down through the ages. And as we said, the true founders of the TS were the masters, and they were like masters of a great lodge, masters of wisdom. And they became what they are and were and still are through intelligent devotion to the three objects. HPB wrote to Mr. Judge in 1890 a little saying that we thought every one of us should have it imbued on our forehead. Be more charitable for others than for yourself, more severe on yourself than you are for others. And this is something that we could remind ourselves all the time. Now we have a few other statements that we wanted to bring out about these objects. So it says, let us take a higher point of view. All problems are dual. Have we ever thought about that? There's two sides to every question. There's two sides to every answer. So it is that eternal duality in nature that we can express, that the idea of taking a higher point of view is much better than taking that quick and easy method. And we're looking for that lasting foreverness, that eternal triad, without which no higher life and no spiritual evolution would ever be popular. Because part of the teachings in the beginning is looking at the principles, the seven principles within the universe, the seven principles briefly within man, that there is that eternal part of us, and there's that part that's temporary. Just like in the universe, comets come and go, planets come and go. There are millions and trillions and billions, and as far as you can think, of planets and planetary systems throughout the universe. And it just seems that they have learned that idea and that understanding, and that there is two sides, but there is that internal duality in nature and in the universe. Now, also, it would seem that if the dealings that we're dealing with of a higher and lower nature within us, it only affects humankind as a house divided against itself is troubled by the duality. We have a permanent nature and we have a temporary nature. It's like the actor who takes on a different act or character within a play. He changes his costume or her costume to deal with the character. So the fact of the matter, we have to divide it against its own self within us. And then it says in the teachings, to the elemental, the mineral, the vegetable, and animal kingdoms, there is only one side to nature, its own. They have only affinities or repulsions in any and every case and act accordingly. It's a natural clausing. And to keep a proper balance requires actions through us. All that is of value in the past will be transmitted to the future. We are the living link between the past and the future. We are the present. And as Shakespeare says, if we keep this in mind at all times, to our own, to thine own self, to our own self, be true. This can help us adapt to the use of these three objects of the theosophical movement. Because it is through that that we can understand a lot more going on within ourselves, too has to be worked on, things that are going on around us, within the world, and about the world, that we can either go into or not go into. The choice is ours. But to know the fact that we have something to fall back on, it's a safeguard. If you keep those three ideas in mind, you can use it all through your life, your work life, your home life, your life in general, for years to come. So, we might have some questions or comments way in the back.
The statement was made that there are no special gifts or privileges except those that are earned. And then there's also a statement by the masters that ingratitude is not one of our vices. So what does that mean? We just, you know, or we can throw that out there.
Okay, do you want to take that?
Ingratitude is not one of our vices. Does that mean that we're, I don't know, what does it mean?
Part of the reform movement, that theosophical movement across time, going all the way back, was activated certainly more in the Christian era, where one of the dogmas in the Christian movement, not by the Christ, but by the kaleidoscope that came after, was that divine grace endowed the human being with certain gifts and potentialities, that these were blessings from a paternalistic, anthropomorphic God. And that the grace was endowed because of some unique savior who then sacrificed life for all followers. Theosophically, the notion of that outside force gifting unique gifts or grace or potentialities to unique individuals, chosen people, however you might want to think about that. The Calvinists talked about predestination. All of that becomes really clear if in that second object that we line the religions up and compare them and see what makes sense in the light of science and philosophy. So theosophically speaking, there's no outside gift. Instead, the proposition is that imbued within the true divine nature of the soul using the human state, all these potentialities exist. And by individual effort of character purification and trying to understand ethics and trying to apply them, any potential powers will come forth naturally from within, without, not imbued with grace or bestowed by something else. Yeah.
It was noticed that in the giving of the three objects of the theosophical movement, there was no mention that one of the objects was to put forth a specific philosophy or to promote a specific philosophy, Eastern or Western or universal. So it would seem then that the movement itself is wider and encompasses many more people and efforts than just any one association or organization that might be putting forth a particular teaching, scientific, philosophical, or otherwise. So we want to be careful not to associate and limit the name of the theosophical movement only to those things, areas that talk about theosophy.
True, we understand what you're saying, but in a way, you probably will study more as a student of this philosophy more than any course that you could take in college, because you're going to be able to understand the history of all teachings, all the great schools that have been and have been. And the famous Alexandrian school was a combination of all different groups coming together, and you could go from one to the other. You're going to have a well-rounded history than you ever got, let's say, in grade school or high school even, unless you go into just one. Now you're getting a picture of what all of them had to say. All the different teachers, all the great teachers, the Buddhas, sages, whatever.
The shortcut probably to most American minds is to depend on the written word. And we have extant in all of the different religions and philosophies and sciences, we've got a lot of sources that we can turn to and read and evaluate. It's not frequently realized that if we turn to legend, myth, art, architecture, symbols that we see among indigenous peoples in the greater world, South America, Africa, Australia, throughout the Americas, we will find evidence of teachings that precede written material that still follow certain guidelines. So that the task, but it's really a joyful study of looking at the world in its complete array of religions and histories and sciences and lining them up and saying, what's the common points? What do they all reflect? Not what do they limit to their own, but what's the common core behind all those masks?
Yeah. Could we have a repeat of that first paragraph on the Declaration, the policy of this lodge?
Oh. Okay, the inquirer wants a repeat. This is just paragraph one of the Declaration of ULT. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. Yes, sir?
It mentions three fundamental principles. How do they apply to our talk today? It says the nucleus of universal brotherhood, but it has to be have some basis. And it's always mentioned to familiarize ourselves with those three fundamental principles, ideas. Fundamental is important.
Well, very, very briefly, there are three fundamental propositions upon which the philosophy rests. The first being one deific force essence, universal font. We struggle with words because it's the unknowable. It is the abstract. It is the universal from which all manifestation comes. So when we think of that first fundamental and then look at the first object to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity, those are, they dovetail. They support one another, don't they? So if that's the universal proposition, that all a manifestation, certainly especially all moving in the human state, come from one source, then the array of differences we think we sense on this plane should not matter. The second fundamental, that periodicity, that there's cause and effect in the universe, that emanation, manifestation comes from that universal source in cause and effect in a cycles, reincarnation and karma in the human kingdom. When we think about the second object, the study of world religions, philosophies, and sciences, both ancient and modern, again, we see cycles. We see a period of a dark time when there's no information available. We see traces of golden ages and ages of enlightenment across time when the study can reveal, hey, there's a universal theme behind all this cause and effect. And the third fundamental of the philosophy is that evolution, that all spirit moving through soul and mind and matter is evolving, is progressing, especially based on the self-fulfilled, the independent, willful actions of soul in the human kingdom. Well, if that's the premise, that third object, investigate the hidden mysteries of nature, especially the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man, that study of what is their potential in the universal, potential behind manifestation, what is there within that permanent sense of self in each human that is akin to all of great nature. And again, that throughout time there's been loud voices. Saint Martin certainly is probably one of the most recent loud voices that don't worry about psychic development. Don't sit for this extra spiritual development. Focus on ethics. Focus on understanding why something can come to be. Focus on ethics and the use of ethics. Yeah.
I'm sitting here back talking to myself with this conversation. And we keep on rewinding or trying to figure out that this is only relevant to ourselves. We're always looking for outside evidence of what we know is true, and we see it in the manifestations of nature. And we're all in conflict. We're all in a struggle with our lower natures. Every one of us, in one degree or another, this is what we're battling now. So all this that we're learning, this evidence that, yes, this has been going on for so long and will continue going on. But, you know, here are guidelines, here are some tools that we can use to join together and make this, like, idea stronger within the community and within our own lives. You know, living these principles is difficult when there's all these obstacles that are in front of us, because we'll face. Because we've been around for 18 million years, so who knows how many incarnations we've had, and we have developed ourselves to this point in time. We are self-conscious and able to look at ourselves, and like the Gita says, here's the guide. Here's how you have to live your life. It doesn't tell you what you do, it tells you how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we personalize everything and we look outside ourselves for the answer. Look within, for thou art Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this philosophy keeps on telling us what you read here, you have to apply it to yourself, or it doesn't stick.
Very true. But the other thing is, I don't know who said this statement, but it's a very good statement. Come ye out and be separate. It's from something, but the idea of just being yourself means to take the time to look inside and to try to find out, what am I all about? Have we ever asked that question? Do you ever ask that question? What am I all about? Why is it that some people are very high, other people are very low in feeling and living? What about that middle path? Find that middle path within ourselves, not the books, not the lectures, within ourselves. We have to start looking within. And it might take many years. It's obvious it takes many lifetimes to keep looking within.
Well, what are we going to find when we keep on looking? What are we looking for?
Are you looking for balance? Are you looking for harmony? Are you only looking for highs and no lows? Or are you looking for what? That's why they always say, learn to walk the middle path. Not too high, not too low. Look for balance. Look for harmony within us and the situations we put ourselves into. Do you have any ideas on that?
But that's only a piece of the puzzle.
Very piece.
That effort to fit ourselves by character development in whatever form we determine or we intuit is right is a difficult process. But it's not, while we're looking at our own natures, the motive and the greater image is that the hidden mysteries of nature latent within each of us in that eternal self is actually a mirror, reflection, the underpinnings, if you will, of great nature and all human beings everywhere. So that effort, that motive to understand and to perfect and to find balance and to understand how to act in the world so that we don't leave a negative karmic impress for any other point of intelligence, that process is a long time coming, but it's for the good of all. I can't bring back the Native American nation that has the moral teaching that there are two wolves residing within the nature of the human being. One is angelic all-powerful, the other is dark, avaricious, and selfish. And in that oral tradition, it is the lesson is the wolf that you feed is the one that takes over and leads your life, your lower nature. I wish I could give a better citation, but I can't. But there's an example of a pre-literate lesson that carries tremendous theosophical impact, especially if we sit back and say, this fight is worthwhile. But the comment was, yes, indeed, character development is a fight. It's a within effort, but it's for the good of all. We impress all of great nature as we do it. Mm. Yes.
Well, we took a look at one's own personal or individual life, and we understand we owe a debt to our parents and all those around us who taught us how to behave ourselves, the moral issues, the ethical laws and so forth, that the churches seem not to depend on too much. If you come this way, you're saved. Whereas we learn that you're responsible for how you behave, based on laws called ethics and so forth. Here, we get some idea of that and what to depend on: faith, hope, and charity.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that it's very simple in a certain way, but the difficulties still exist. Does theosophy give us any hope of finally understanding ourselves? This lecture this morning points to these objects and so forth. Am I responsible myself for this?
Well, you can't blame anybody else for where you're standing right now. You really can't blame anybody else. And for most of us, it takes a while to think, well, you can't blame, I can't blame my parents, I can't blame this teacher, I can't blame this stuff. It's, you know, it's taking responsibility for the ickiness that you're in right now, or the joy and the beauty that you might be in right now. That is something you can spread out. It's those little things that really irritate you and bring out an irritation to others around you by how you react.
Then that word independent is the key.
Independent devotion is asked for. Independent. What does that mean? Me, myself, and I. Split that up to that higher part that wants to get through and do the, quote, right thing, versus that part of us that sort of runs with the crowd, left, right, we don't know where we're going, but we're going. That sitting quietly, that taking up meditation, taking an idea to meditate on, to think about. For meditation, for some of us, first time you sit down and they tell you you're going to sit here for a half hour and think, oh my goodness, it sounds like it'll be years. For some individuals, they fall right into it, pick a subject matter and meditate on it. Others maybe have trouble getting there. Maybe you have an idea.
The thing that came to mind while you were speaking, there's actually a high degree of hope in these three objects based on the three principles.
Yeah.
And in the, if you think back, we're told that the entire Alexandrian effort to pull the world religions and philosophies and sciences together was blown up by the Romans and the Roman Church, when they burned all the books, they destroyed all the philosophers and all the students, and it was a catastrophe. And despite that, as time passes and there's more and more scientific discoveries, including the Dead Sea Scrolls for the Gnostic tradition, there are more and more open-minded, seeking souls who are looking into the most dogmatic of teachings, the Book of Matthew, the Lord's Prayer, the Sermon on the Mount, which is highly Buddhistic, to be honest, the first five verses of Paul to the Corinthians, embedded in the very scriptures, the trace elements of scriptures that still exist, are these ideas. So regardless of how dark a period of time might fall on a continent or a group of people, individual efforts to call forth the information, to impress the teachings within the heart and the soul, they don't go for naught. It rises again according to the karmic cycles of, can't even imagine the universality and the extent of that. That's tremendous hope, I think. Yeah.
If we are fill ourselves in sympathy with these objects of the theosophical movement, how do we begin to work practically to fulfill or help those, the realization of those objects? What do we have to begin to do where we are to meet each one of those objects?
How do we begin to work where we are? Bloom where you're planted the great colloquialism. Well, if we're interested in forming the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity, where does that start but in our own heart, in our own mind? So perhaps in the morning, we might want to pick out an inspirational book, some music, some art, for a period of meditation on universal brotherhood. What does that mean? How might we hopefully envision that for the good of all that we come into contact throughout the course of that day? So we can begin by meditating, perhaps reading something. We can make the effort through the day to periodically take our inventory to see how we're doing on thinking from that basis, feeling from that basis, acting from that basis. In our leisure time, whatever we've got available to us, can we be on a search? If it's listening to a radio show, watching a film, reading a novel, poetry, literature, if we're talking to someone who was raised in a different religious tradition, whatever it is in terms of religion, philosophy, and science, can we remain alert, listening in the light of the fundamental principles to see, is that reasonable? Is that acceptable? Where can we agree? Where can we bring diverse opinion together back to that nucleus again? And then in terms of meditation and study, I often hear in these rooms that there's analogies and correspondences. And as a specific person, I haven't studied science since, in an organized fashion, since 1965. But I know that through my course of studying here at the Lodge, I can see more and more parallels between something that happens in great nature and something that I sense from within in my own personality or limited character. And so as we meet people who have other points of view about psychism, spirituality, spiritualism, established religions, we can investigate that hidden side of nature from a whole different vantage point.
have a story of a warrior who's in battle or going to start battle, and he doesn't know what to do, and he asks his higher self, "What should I do?" And the higher self tells him what to do, or what he can do. And he hears it all, and then at the very end, "Well, what is the best thing I could do?" And the higher self tells us that if we're pursuing truth, do it best seems unto you. Just do it, because you're impelled to do it to act. So just fill yourself with these ideas. That's all they are ideas. That's what they are, ideas. We make them real.
And when we stop to think of soul or mind, however you consider that, using a physical brain to generate the ideas, to cause the ideas, to sustain the ideas, to act on the ideas, ideas become points of life. They become invigorated. They become things in the astral, in the metaphysical world, if you will. So if we do start where we're planted, and if moment by moment we try to be mindful to act for the best instead of the dearer, trying to be charitable and kind, we begin to unleash, if you will, or open up the heart and expand the potentiality of not only ourselves, but of everything within our sphere of influence.
And you have to have a sense of humor about yourself, because I'm sure we go through the day and, "Oh, why did I do that?" Yeah. And we just feel so stupid. And it's like, because you just did it and you didn't think first.
Yep.
You got a mind, you're a mind being. Take everything else away. You got that mind, and you go into different levels. We go through different parts of our day, from waking to sleeping to dreaming to deep sleep. We never lose that consciousness. We might not remember a dream, but we might remember a feeling. And if you ever had those kind of dreams, you know that you want to hold on to that feeling. It is so wonderful. It's going to fade away as we work into the day. It's a process we have to work on. We have to look within. And sometimes, as Mr. Judge told someone once, it's like looking into a glove. It's dark in there. Keep looking. There are finger wares, thumb wares. Keep looking. Don't give up. Make it sort of like a habit you really want to work on. So there. Yes.
From what's been said, it seems as though the theosophical movement is made up of human beings like any other, who have the same strengths and weaknesses, maybe in different degrees. The only difference is that these individuals have determined to make themselves better, to make the effort. They still may fail, they still make mistakes, but they're trying to keep trying. And the wonderful thing is, in spite of their failures, conditions change for the better around them. Without that effort, we wouldn't have many of the advances that we have today, politically, religious, scientific, philosophical. So it's not the scorecard that makes the movement, it's the effort.
Yeah. And any artist, including the artist of life, will remind you that that's a state of mind, and it's the process of creation, not the product, that's important. So if we keep these three objects in mind in the process of life, the product will come. But we're out of time.
Yes, we are.
See you on Wednesday.
Okay.